WTC. What is this, number 22? We Talk Comics, back on the air and in your ear. This one will be We Talk Comics, The Fearsome Four. And, of course, I'm Mo, and I'm going to get my co-hosts to introduce themselves here, starting with, of course, Brett. Brett, what are you doing? Reading, watching, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been reading some Marvel comics. I'm about to read some Civil War.
I'm sorry.
Actually, I don't mind Civil War. It's just too long. But you know, I'm going to zip through it and see if I can actually power through the end this time. But I just finished watching the amazing season 2 of Boardwalk Empire, which is definitely one of my favorite shows that's on television. And otherwise, you know, pretty much about the same with busy, got lots busy.
All right, Keith, what have you been reading, watching, or doing?
Just caught myself up on Weeds, watched the full 7th season. Love that show, love every minute of it. And I am currently reading Superman New Krypton, which I've made no secret of my hatred of any Kryptonian over and above the number of one. One is the total population of Kryptonians I want in the DC universe. So I put off reading this, and now that it's out of continuity and I can treat it as a really long Elseworlds story, I'm actually really enjoying it.
Yeah, I actually did enjoy it too, and I didn't have the difficulty while it was going on, though I used to have the same idea. I thought I would hate it because I was also somebody who thinks there should be the last son of Krypton. That's the whole point of the thing. But it was a pretty good story, and I kind of like what they did with it. Chris, so what have you been reading, watching, or doing?
Well, I've been watching some really interesting 80s movies. I have to say that The Last Starfighter does not hold up under repeated viewings. And I've been scouring the internet for insane ramblings by one Harlan Ellison. I have to say there's a lot out there.
Who knew? Well, of course, I'm Mo, and I am Mo, M-O, underscore We Talk on Twitter. You can find me, Mo at We Talk Podcast. I thought I'd throw that out at the beginning. Well, I'll just throw it out at the end, just because why not? I mean, I'm the only one you really need to get a hold of. But I've been playing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. I've been reading, just finished reading The Infinity War, reading some Christopher Higgins novels. I have been watching The Bill Cosby Show, the 1971-1972 sitcom, available from Shout Factory. If you're interested in the DVD, check it out on YouTube. It's got a different rhythm than any sitcom I've ever seen. And watching Star Trek Filmation animated series. That's awesome. So anyways, we're going to get right to it with our regular feature from at Cub Reporter K on Twitter, Keith, the weekly news.
Okay, well, we have new trailers have broken for The Avengers and for The Amazing Spider-Man. And we have our first photos of Judge Dredd, starring Carl Urban. And my quick reviews, Avengers, I just grin like a fool every second of that trailer, every time I watch it. Amazing Spider-Man, wasn't terribly excited about it before. Trailer has not changed my mind. And Judge Dredd, I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.
Hey, Brett, have you seen any of them?
Yeah, I pretty much smile like a schoolboy through the Avengers trailer. I have no problem whatsoever with the Judge Dredd photos, and let's see now. I'm not even going to bother watching the Amazing Spider-Man trailer because I just don't care that much.
Why don't you care?
I just don't have any hopes. You know, I don't care about watching trailers that much anyways. I'll see it, but it won't be like the Avengers.
No, but you're
but
not.
They promise that it's the untold story.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I'm just curious. Why is it you're not interested in this new Spider-Man movie? What has turned you off for it?
Really the act. The Andrew Garfield, I've seen some of his stuff and I hated it. And
he's who?
He's Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's okay. Spider-Man, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I just don't have a good feeling for the movie, but, you know, maybe I'll be wrong.
Okay.
I hope so.
All right, no problems. How about you, Chris? Have you seen any of them?
Yeah, I've seen them all. I really liked what I saw in the Avengers. The Spider-Man thing is pretty much a who cares thing. We've seen the Spider-Man origin story before. It was done well. I don't really see a need to do it again with lesser filmmakers. And Judge Dredd, I'm actually kind of excited about this one. The one you're missing, though, is Ghost Rider. I can't wait for this one. I really want to see this. I'm excited. I didn't love the first one, but well, the crank guys are doing it, so there should be some insane stuff going on. And he pisses fire in the trailer, man. Blaming your nation always gets my money.
Yeah, you know what? He should really see a doctor about that. Anyways, Keith, move on with your news.
All right. Well, DC has announced that they will be bringing back annuals this year, starting in
just
May.
That's what we were missing.
Well, with no events, DC's mixing up the way they're doing crossovers, essentially. All three annuals that they've announced so far will tie into storylines that have been running to create crossover bridges through multiple titles. So as we continue these kind of mini-events that DC's been playing, as opposed to the gigantic, earth-shattering AVX that's going to suck up Marvel for 6 months, the Batman annual by Snyder will tie into Night of the Owls. The Animal Man annual will bridge Animal Man and Swamp Thing, leading into a crossover of those two books.
Did I get it wrong?
The Court of Owls is the name of the group. Night of the Owls is the actual event.
Oh, okay.
I think I got that the right way. So Animal Man's annual will be the crossover point for Animal Man and Swamp Thing, which have a big that they've been clearly leading somewhere with the red and the green. And then the Teen Titans annual will bridge the Teen Titans, Superboy, Legion Lost, and lead into the new Ravagers title, which is the second wave title that starts in May.
I used to love annuals. And I love when DC did do, like, the Elseworlds annuals. That's some of my favorites. But as a kid, the annuals was just big story that was good stuff. Some of my favorite stories were in annuals when I was a kid. Anybody else feel for annuals?
I used to love the Spider-Man annuals with all the backup features.
Yeah.
I like those backup, and the backup features tend to age better, too. There's a lot of really great, you know, Nomad, which I love that run. My Nicesia launched out of an annual backup in Captain America.
There you go.
Yeah, so I find that the backup stories tend to age better, though. And, you know, when I go back, look at the collection, I'm not terribly interested in the, you know, Spider-Man Microverse story in one of the year's annuals, but there were backups that were really interesting of Prowler and Black Cat and all these supporting characters.
Cool. All right.
And the Amazing Spider-Ham.
Peter Porker.
We have some January sales numbers. The big shock is that now that Marvel has run out of material to pump onto the market to flood the market, DC captured all 10 of the top 10 books for January.
Holy crap.
The biggest shock to everyone as they look at the comics world that has greeted them in January 2012 is that Aquaman is number 10. This means that Aquaman, number 5, outsold every Marvel title. Try to get your head around that
one. You know what? I think officially I'm going to back off my criticism of the New 52. Because I thought it would die off, but you know what? Success for them.
And they second prints, fourth prints, fifth prints of some of these earlier books.
Yeah, I saw a fifth print from the Batman number 1 and stuff like that solicited. So, yeah, impressive.
And then we've got, and then the 11 through 20 are almost entirely X books. All the top Marvel books are all in the 11 to 20. Amazing Spider-Man, The Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine, and the X-Men, X-Sanction, etc. Most of the rest of the top 20 is Marvel. Scarlet Spider debuted at 21.
Wow.
So that's some of the January numbers. And Smallville. Anyone actually watch Smallville at the end?
Not by the end, no.
I think I dropped in the fourth season.
I've never seen an episode.
I was a very sporadic watcher for the first about four seasons or so. Caught it when it was convenient.
Except for the one nearly perfect episode in the 10th season, which I did watch, featuring the greatest hero of all time.
Captain Marvel was in it?
So close.
I mean, Shazam.
Shazam. They've just announced that there will be a Smallville Season 11 comic book, keeping with the success that Buffy and Angel and Firefly have had. There will be a comic that picks up 6 months after the events of Season 10. The Clark Kent that was featured in Smallville in costume, featuring the supporting cast of that series, including that version of Green Arrow, Chloe, etc. It will be a digital first comic. So like the Justice League Beyond that we took a look at last week, it will be digital, packaged in some way, and then print later. Brian Q. Miller is writing.
And who's he?
He wrote Batgirl a couple of years ago, I believe it was.
Does he have any affiliation with the TV series? Writing any episodes of that? Do you know?
Yes, he did write episodes.
Okay. I think it's a great idea. I love when they do this. Why not continue the stories?
I'm a big fan of Buffy season 9, season 8, and I haven't read season 9 yet, but season 8.
It's great for the fans. It's a terrific cheap way to keep it going. I think it's an awesome idea. You know, I'm not a big fan of what they've done with Justice League Beyond in their presentation, not just obviously the terrible writing of not letting anybody know the character settings or events. That's one thing, but simply in the layout and the way that they present this comic book in the large splash panels, and they think they're, I think, being wise about the use of digital media. Instead, what they're doing is overthinking it and not presenting a comic book anymore. They're just presenting a page of a lot of white background and quick panels, and it doesn't read very well. So if that's the way DC is viewing digital books, digital only books, I am worried, and I'd be worried for this too if I was a fan of it. But you know, it might be too early to say that this is their strategy for the entire digital medium.
Well, we did see some numbers this week from it was a business report, and I don't have the article in front of me, but it was estimates on digital comics for 2011 and then comparing the market over the past couple of years. In 2009, the estimate was about $1 million in digital comics revenue, and this is across the board stuff, so we include Comixology, their own apps, etc. In 2010, $8 million. In 2011, $25 million. So it is growing very, very fast. DC certainly leading the way, but they think that this kind of jump is the digital first has made a huge change.
And yeah, it's too bad it's not better. Like I say, it's too bad. I don't think their use of the medium is good. It still should be a comic book. Shouldn't be, you know. Anyways, JLA would fit right in, though. Original JLA, I mean. All right, anything else?
Yes, one last thing that just broke seconds before we started recording. Tony Moore is suing Robert Kirkman for royalties on The Walking Dead. Moore was the artist on the first 6 issues and then did covers for about 20 more issues of The Walking Dead. He owns no rights to the book and is claiming he's suing for royalties on everything Walking Dead that has been done since, including half the TV show. So expect this one to get a bit messy.
Thoughts, gentlemen?
They don't like
I hate to see it.
Why do you hate to see it?
I don't like to see anybody suing anybody, especially when it can impact the series I enjoy, both the television series and the
I don't see how it would impact it, Chris. I mean, you know, it's not going to shut it down. It's a moneymaker. I mean, gentleman like, believes it's just a business thing. The gentleman believes that he's earned or has the right to some money that he hasn't received, and he's going after it.
I can't wait for the next issue of Miracle Man.
That's a little bit different, Chris. Very different. Very different situation.
And that's the news.
That's the news. Anybody, do you have any thoughts on it? Anybody else on that last bit? Keith, you always have thoughts.
It's tough with, yes, I always do. My opinions are free. So I have a lot of them.
You're like it? I'm not gonna make the obvious joke.
It's a tough, creator rights and you know, creator lawsuits are always a dicey thing, and it's hard to come down when, you know, it's hard to separate the work you enjoy from someone got screwed by it. And we're talking about this last week with Watchmen, and, you know, talk about it with Superman, etc., of, you know, there is that moral what should be done and what should have been done, and then there's the, you know, no one put a gun to your head and made you sign the contract. And, you know, for these guys, they started Walking Dead expecting to sell, you know, 500 copies of the thing or whatever. No one had any idea it would become a network show and, you know, make tons of money. And I bought one of my staff the Walking Dead calendar for Christmas. Like, no one knew that stuff was going to come. So, you handshake agreement. And unfortunately, once the money starts rolling in, that handshake doesn't hold a lot of water.
For me, the question is, if he is successful in this lawsuit, is what does this do for other potential lawsuits from other artists and other creators? And is this going to start a snowball effect through the industry of people looking to get their piece of the pie? To me, that's what makes it bigger than just this one lawsuit. And that's what's going to be interesting to follow.
I guess as we find out what his agreement was, you know, I do fear that it was this kind of handshake. You know, someone says, well, if I'm ever making any money, I'll make sure you get some of it. Like, or if you were smart, I mean, it wasn't an Image book when it started, correct?
I'm not sure.
It started as an indie, didn't it?
I believe it was an Image book right off the start.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I think the reason that he was replaced was because he was too slow, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because he stayed on cover, so it wasn't, you know.
If I remember correctly, it was that he was just too slow to get the interiors done, so he couldn't really handle the pressures of a month-to-month book.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, and it's just one of those cases where perhaps he thinks because he started with Kirkman that he obviously feels that he helped design and create the characters, so that he has some sort of claim to do that money. So it will be interesting. I mean, obviously this will force the creators to really, it should force the creators to lay down contracts to actually ensure that there is, you know, proper delineation of the rights.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think that it's interesting. I guess as time goes on, we'll see if it's a person who really deserves more of, like I say, the piece of the pie than he's received, or if it's simply he's somebody who's bitter that he foolishly signed a bad contract, or didn't at all. So it'll be interesting to follow going forward. All right, let's go on to our regular feature, one of our semi-regular features. We have two of our semi-regular features we're bringing back as topics this week. Let's open up, boys. Which one do you want to do? Burn this book or four for a dollar?
Let's start with burn this book.
All right, like Keith is jumping right in there. He's going to burn the first book then. Human Torch, this sucker.
Well, I was thinking before the show, because you can't go through the boxes looking for things that you hated. So it's sometimes hard to bring back memories of things that you just despise. But this one's in my head. And I don't remember what the issues were, but it was right around the Heroes Reborn time. And it was the young Tony Stark, when they had replaced Tony Stark with an 18-year-old version of Tony Stark. And it was just nonsense. It took the clone saga he was a space alien clone or something. It was just ridiculous. And there was no point to making him young. It was just they wanted a younger character when they were trying to rebuild some of the big properties at Marvel.
And they wouldn't just do what DC did and kill off Green Arrow and make his son.
It was essentially that, though, that they had killed off the older Tony Stark and then made a clone.
Kill off Hal Jordan, make it a young guy. I mean,
what can only be referred to as nonsense.
Nonsense. What the fudge? Chris, how about your burn this book? Or any thoughts on Keith's? If anybody has any thoughts on anybody's, please jump in.
On Keith, I never read that run. I'm thankful, actually, listening to Keith's review of it. I would like to just separate that from a different younger Tony Stark. The Ultimate Comics Tony Stark was younger, but that run holds up.
Well, yeah, it's Orson Scott Wells, and that was Orson Scott Card. Why am I getting the wrong name?
Orson Scott Card.
Thank you. Sorry, Orson Scott Wells. Jesus. Anyways, yeah, Orson Scott Card. That was pretty good. I only read the first volume, but I really, really liked it. So, go ahead, Chris.
Okay, I'm burning a book by a fan favorite, a favorite writer of all of ours on the podcast, Garth Ennis. I truly hated, and I'm taking these out of my collection. I never want to read them again. The Fury and Fury Peacemaker Limited series. This was a time right before Garth Ennis had taken over the Punisher series, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I do think it's readable. But Garth Ennis' take on Fury just pisses me off. Fury just running around swearing, it sounds good, but it wasn't. Stan Lee has gone on record as saying he didn't like the series, he didn't like the take, he didn't like the tone, he didn't like anything about it. The first limited series was a Max series, and the second limited series was a Marvel Knights series, but they both had exactly the same tone. And it's a true disappointment from a team of Ennis and Derek Robinson, who I've generally liked everything they've done together, with this standout, horrendously bad section of, I think it's 10 comics. Hated it. Never want to see it again. It doesn't exist anymore.
I was a big fan of Ennis's Punisher, actually. And I think what's strange is that you mentioned that it was two miniseries. I think I have picked up issues of that randomly and always thought it was the same miniseries because there's no story to it. It just rambles around, and I think you could read those issues in any order, and it would make as much sense as if you had it in the right order.
Yeah, it's funny. There are times, absolutely, with Garth Ennis that because I love the Punisher stuff too. I think it's fantastic stuff, but and certainly his early work, I absolutely love as well, but there are times when I just feel like he goes off the reservation and he's just really out there, and you're just like, wait a minute now, that was crap. You just wrote that when you were on the toilet, didn't you? and I think that it's pretty safe to say
you
that
got your inspiration
stuff,
pool was in the toilet.
Yeah, because. Because there's been a few of his works that I've thrown out just because it's just like, I can't read this crap.
That was a phrase I said I texted to Mo today when we were talking about a book that neither of us enjoyed and neither one reads anymore. And I said that he put in a solid weekend of half days writing that.
And what was that book?
That was Justice League. I enjoy both lines of dialogue that are in it every month.
You know what? I don't want to turn this into a review. I don't want to turn this into a review of the Punisher Max, but I'll just say this: as everybody else has weighed in, I think it was good, and it's the law of diminishing returns. It quickly gets old. Is my opinion on that book. So, Brett, burn this book. Burn a book. What the hell?
All right. Oh, I'm definitely gonna get the lighter up here, but I'm going to go with now. There's of course plenty in this offshoot to actually burn, but I'm going to burn 2099 World of Tomorrow. Now, in Marvel Comics, they did the 2099 universe, and you know what? Some of the stuff is good. The vast majority of it is garbage, but at times I've enjoyed several of the series. So, when they ended them, they decided to put together another series that was going to include pretty much all the characters, and it was supposed to wrap up all of the storylines that were left dangling when most of the 2099 books were canceled. This sounds like a fine idea, but Ben Rabb and Joe Kelly, they decided something different. They decided that that rather than do that, they would maybe start to talk about some of those, but actually what they were going to do was start a whole bunch of new storylines.
Oh.
And then after eight issues, that book was canceled. No, unsurprisingly there. So basically, you had eight messy issues of a whole bunch of crappy characters running around, and no real storylines got ended. A whole bunch got started, and you're just left with one of the messiest comics that I've ever read in my life. And, you know, I love Doom 2099. The Ellis stuff is fantastic. But it's like, I didn't even want him to be in this, because it was just like, this is crap. Ah! I hated it.
Even before Ellis took over, Doom was pretty good, 2099.
It was, yeah.
I'm struggling to recall the name, Tom Morgan or something?
Pat Broderick was doing the, I think it was Pat Broderick.
Pat Broderick, okay.
The first bit. Or six or something.
You know what? But I have to say, just off the top of your head, I mean, I'll let everybody, I'm glad I got off 2099 before that and I let everybody weigh in. But Brett, just off the top of your head, just to quickly think, what 2099 books would you burn?
Let's see now. What would I burn? Well, The Hulk 2099 I would burn. X-Nation 2099 I would burn. Fantastic Four 2099 I would burn. Ghost Rider 2099 I would burn. I would probably burn the X-Men 2099. And I would leave Spider-Man, and I know it's going to sound crazy, but there were points after Stan Lee left it that I thought Ravage was a fairly okay comic book for the times. So I'll leave it, but there's a lot of books within that that I would burn.
That's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, that's controversial right there. That's the most controversial statement Brett has ever made on We Talk Comics right there.
There were some good issues of Ravage, is that one?
There were some passable issues of Ravage, absolutely, yes.
That's it.
Well, let me put it this way.
You're aware he used a garbage can lid as a weapon in every issue?
Sure, that's fine.
Brett, there was a lot of issues of Ravage I wished I had walked past. But because of you, I picked them up. Passable. In a different way. Chris, what would you burn out of 2099?
Everything but Spider-Man 2099 and Doom 2099.
Keith?
I would go with the same, but I would burn probably half of Spider-Man as well. Except for the issues that are included in my $4 blog on our website.
There you go. Nice plug.
Because there are issues of the Spider-Man 2099 that tie into the new universe.
That's Peter David.
Yeah, but aren't those from The Exiles?
Nope. Peter David was writing, he wrote Spider-Man 2099.
Yep.
And early on in the run, about issue 20 or so, he introduced a character called the Net Prophet, who had been pulled through, one of the worst names ever, who had been pulled through from another dimension, and it was revealed in the last issue of Spider-Man 2099 that that character was actually John Tenson, Justice, from the New Universe.
Cool.
And I actually have to say, the last part of your blog, I was riveted. When you teased that you had a piece of a Marvel stationery, I wanted to kill you because I thought you opened a Marvel No Prize, which is something I've always wanted. That's not the case, but I truly enjoyed the last part of your blog.
They still give those out?
I don't think so, no.
Bastards. I'd love them to email me, no prize.
So visit our website, wetalkpodcast.com, and check out my blog, $4
We'll talk a little bit more about We Talk Podcast, because in the future, this is where we want people to come and visit us and get a whole bunch of goodies. But I'm just going to say, you know what? Brett reminded me of the Hulk 2099, and that was, oh, my God. But I wouldn't even bother burning a lot of these, but that X-Men was terrible, and God, Ravage. Brett, come on. Anyways, all right, let's...
I will say this for the Hulk 2099. He looked cool. I like him. But, Brett,
I had a question.
What
are you talking about? He looked like an image take on the Hulk that where it was like somebody who was like 13 years old and trying and had no skill but was trying to draw like an image artist of the 90s was doing the Hulk is what it looked like.
I don't want to argue this point. I just thought he looked cool. But
Chris is in the unenviable position of defending all 29.
Brett, you're from this book. Did that come before or after 2099 Unlimited?
Unlimited was during
it. I actually don't remember the book.
Unlimited was during the runs of all the books.
Yeah, and and that was horrid too.
I actually got off the 2099 bandwagon when they introduced the second run of all the characters with Hulk and Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the only reason that I even read this was because I haven't read the vast majority of the 2099 books, but I read the entire run of Doom 2099, and when that came to its conclusion, you know, I decided that I really wanted to, you know, see if it carried on, and so of course it's just like, oh, okay, I'll read this.
For those listening, Brett made air quotes there.
For those listening and not watching, sure that, the few of you not watching.
I'm not sure if his tone will work.
All right, I'm going to do my burn this book, and you know what? It's one that has been thrown out as a joke many times in this podcast, so I figure it's time we got around to just burning this sucker. It is issues 405 through 407 is the storyline of this particular Legendary Characters, volume number one. It is a two-word storyline. I think everybody who is in this podcast already knows what I'm going to say. But those of you who don't, Capwolf. Gentlemen, reactions.
Hey, Grenwald was overworked.
He must have been.
Oh, yeah. No, Capwolf came out in a period when Marvel went weekly, bi-weekly on Captain America.
For a couple of years, they did bi-weekly runs of a couple of the higher-selling books. And Captain America actually was a higher-selling book, I think, when Ron Lim was drawing it, that it had jumped up in sales quite quickly. And it was Amazing Spider-Man, Captain America, and X-Men, I think, were the ones that went bi-weekly for summer stories. And it was usually like a six-part summer story. Capwolf is just, it's become a punchline. It is, you know, people that weren't even born when that book came out know it because it's a punchline, not because of anything that, you know, certainly it didn't have any long-term effects.
Well, there was a character called Manwolf within the Marvel Universe that was John Jameson had received a kind of a jewel, I guess you call it, a gem that attached to him and turned him into a wolf from the moon when he was visited the moon. That was so it was called Manwolf and started as a villain, became a hero. So I believe that if I remember correctly from reading this piece of crap all those years ago, that somehow this jewel, this vampire type jewel, living jewel, got on Captain America, turned him into a werewolf. This book, all I'm going to say is, not only is the concept, now it'd be one thing for Captain America being a werewolf, you might think that sounds cool, but he was still a hero and they called him Capwolf. I mean, the idea here is so ludicrous. And the execution, just as poor. Grunwald did a lot. Talk about overworked or not. That's not the only wacky storyline around this era he did. He worked on Captain America, I believe, from 1911 to about 1991, if I remember correctly. Like, he was on that thing for a long, long time. And it's not the only wacky thing he did in that era. He did a lot of wacky stuff with Captain America.
But most of it's readable, unlike Capwolf.
What's that?
Most of it's readable, unlike Capwolf.
Some of it's readable, some of it isn't. There's a lot of cheese in there.
It was the height of that 80s period when they were just telling any story they could get their hands on. They were doing, it was just like, yeah, I'm writing, man.
Well,
92.
Don't write it, burn it.
Or 90s. All right, we should talk about the 90s. There was a lot of crap that came out in the 90s.
There really was. Actually, if I burned the books, how many of those came out in the 90s? All right, well, let's move on to something a little more positive here. Let's do our four for a dollar.
Actually, I would like to mount a defense of Capwolf.
I stopped the F-bomb. It almost... You can't.
Still, it is good from the point of view, if you look at it, as Mark Grenwald's reaction to editorial interference. You can tell he had a meeting somewhere and they said, you know what Captain America needs? More guest stars. because you got Rain from X-Force, you got Cable, you got every werewolf character, Jack Russell, in these issues, and it becomes the and then the editor says, and we want you to do two a month. And instead of arguing, he decides to write a beautiful joke that doesn't get read before it's published. Because it is so, so much worse than the rest of Grenwald's run, in my opinion. That it is sort of beautiful in its absurdity. I mean, you got things going on in this book that really make no sense whatsoever. And from that point of view, it is actually beautiful in its bad awfulness.
But wasn't he executive editor at the time?
Yeah, I think you are giving it way too, way
well, there
too much.
Is that. There is
okay.
That.
Captain America in this time was turned into a teenager. He was also turned into a druggie at one point. You were giving the guy too much credit. There is nothing, a teenage Captain America. There is no defense for this run. There's some good Grenwald issues. There's a lot of Cap. Cap Wolf is the top of it. Don't sit there saying that the guy who had that much power at Marvel was sitting there and coattailing to editorial. He was practically in charge. He was like the number two guy behind DeFalco. You're crazy, man.
But he was fired right afterwards.
Chris, when can we expect your doctoral thesis on the matter?
I
liked a lot of Grimwald's run on Captain America, I know he was on it for too long.
There was some good stuff, but doesn't mean that something's crap. Still call it crap.
Well, I think what happened there is that he did the Serpent storyline, where he brought in every Serpent-related character, and he had Diamondback in, and the Serpent Society, and Constrictor, and all these characters, every snake-themed villain that there, hero and villain that there was in the Marvel Universe, he brought into the story, and he's like, "Well, I've captured lightning in a bottle there. How about every wolf-related character?" And I love that one of them's real name is Jack Russell, and he turns into a wolf. That's awesome. It's one of those like perfectly 60s and 70s comic things. That he's like Jack Russell, and he turns into a dog or a wolf. It's awesome.
All right. No more defending this storyline. Let's move on. Brett, four for a buck.
All right. I'm going to pull one out of the archives from a long, long time ago. This is a book that Chris got me onto, and I bet you that you may struggle even to find it in the quarter bins, but this is definitely where it belongs in its own way. The Aristocratic Extraterrestrial Time Traveling Thieves, later on changed to the X-Thieves. This is one of those 80s books that is a very quite a bit like our friend Mike Luoma and his Alibi Jones book, that black and white space epic kind of feel. I thought it was great fun. It was a very funny book. It ran about 12 issues in a zero issue, I think, and it was just so much fun. I totally recommend anybody look for it in their quarter bin.
I've never read it, so I have nothing to say except for the fact that I would certainly look it up. Anybody else comments?
Good luck finding it in any quarter bin in Western Canada. I have bought them all. I buy this book and give it out just freely to people I meet on the street. I absolutely love it. It doesn't age particularly well. But anytime your heroes are fighting against worms that eat your words, and I actually considered it for tonight's four for a dollar myself. Luckily, I didn't go that way. But I love the book.
I have this image in my head of you standing on a street, handing out this book, and saying, "It's a little dated."
And the funny thing is, we know Chris enough to know he would. He actually...
I have so many copies of X-Thieves because every time I see it, I just pick it up because it's under 50 cents.
Yeah, see, I just wanted to jump in with it before you got to it because I knew that it was going to come soon, and I figured it's just like, oh, I'm going to take it this time.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Chris, why don't you give us yours then?
I went with, a favorite writer of mine that I feel never gets enough credit, Steve Gerber. He did a series for a DC Focus called Hard Time I guess it was the early 2000s. Unfortunately, the DC decided to cancel the line less than a year into the line. And the line was superpower stories that don't fit into the superhero milieu, the genre. Hard Time focused on a 16-year-old lad, I believe he was, who was convicted of crime that he was guilty of, but not truly guilty. But he is sent to prison where he finds out he has superpowers. And it's just him trying to survive in a prison while keeping his superpower secret, yet, you know, trying not to get raped every day. This series, once DC Focus had finished up, it did get a season 2, which only lasted 7 issues, but truly a brilliant series.
Yeah, I could have gone my entire life doing podcasts without hearing the sentence, trying not to get raped every day. This was a good book, though. I've read it, too. I really liked it. Terrific stuff. You are a fan of Gerber?
I love Gerber, man.
Because you didn't like Destroyer Duck, which was him and Kirby. So I was just curious.
No, I liked Destroyer. I just didn't think it was leading anywhere, and I felt he was just yelling at Marvel about the whole Howard the Duck thing.
About that stuff that he had a legitimate cause to yell about. Okay, sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I just don't need to read about it. That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, Steve Gerber. This was a really good book. Anybody else read it? I mean, Steve Gerber at 60 years old, taken from us way too early. Very talented man. Anybody else read this book?
I haven't read it. I love Steve Gerber, you know, or I love a lot of Steve Gerber.
You like this, so. Brett. This is good stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, a guy trying not to get raped? Wow.
Yeah, he didn't say whether or not he succeeded. Just tried not to get raped every day. All right, let's move on.
And now I'm trying to imagine going into a comic store and saying, so I'm looking for this Steve Gerber book that I heard about on a podcast. It's just about this guy who's trying not to get raped every day. do you have that in? Is it in the bin?
And they'll go, okay, it could be this one, or this one.
yeah.
All right, Keith, 4 for a buck.
But I have this lovely copy of Capwolf for you.
Well, I'm going to pick some issues late in the run of great Mark Gruenwald working on Captain America, where he gave Man-Wolf's Moonstone.
He's laughing because right now I'm not using quotations, but I do have 2 fingers up in the air.
My 4 for a dollar pick is a book that I actually think should be worth more than 4 for a dollar, but it isn't. John Byrne's run on West Coast Avengers. Now, I love John Byrne, and John Byrne retcons like nobody's business. He is the king. They, you know, DC made him first $1 million comic book creator to redo Superman in the mid-80s. He was the golden boy because he was the best at finding the little threads and tying them all together. He revamped Superman, and he retconned so much over the years.
And then he was put in charge. Spider-Man Year One.
Well, he was put in charge of finding a way to get Jean Grey back into the Marvel Universe. That's why he was why they connected Fantastic Four up with the launch of X-Factor, is that they needed someone who could pull these tiny little threads and come up with a way
bring
Jean Grey back.
Burn this Marvel. Book will be that Spider-Man.
Haven't we already got? I think we've already burned that book.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It deserves to be burned a second time. But yeah, anyways, go on.
But what he did on West Coast Avengers is that one of the goals he had was to bring back the original Human Torch, who for 25 years had been in the Marvel Universe as the Vision. That the Vision, and that the Human Torch's, this would be the android Human Torch, had his memory wiped, and then he was rebuilt as the Vision. And Byrne came in, and in a stroke of retcon genius, just said, yeah, but the only reason you think that is because Ultron told you that. And Ultron's not really a great source of information. So he pulled at that thread and found a way to reintroduce the original Human Torch and make Vision more interesting at the same time. It's unfortunate that he left West Coast Avengers in a bit of a huff, not wrapping up his storyline. And it was wrapped up really, really poorly by two different writers. One was Roy Thomas, and the other one was to finish up what he was doing with Magneto and Scarlet Witch, but certainly setting up some of the things that would play out years later in House of M as far as Scarlet Witch went.
I think it is worth noting that run isn't a lot of that run isn't actually titled West Coast Avengers. It's titled Avengers West Coast.
Yes, he was the one that changed the name because he had taken over the Avengers title, writing it with Tom Palmer drawing. Wanted them to sit next to each other on a shelf, essentially.
And didn't Perez actually do some of the art in the early issues of that?
Byrne was drawing West Coast Avengers, but I think Perez was doing some of the Avengers books when...
Oh, okay.
And it had gone bi-weekly at one point, too, during that. It was that same era where they did a big space story that took the whole summer or something.
I just remembered... Tigra being extremely hot during that
She was way hot.
John Byrne, he knows his attractive woman.
Attractive cat woman.
That was a great run.
I also like the redesign on Mockingbird during that era.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the Tigras. It gives new term or new meaning to the term. Here, kitty, 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 come here, pussy.
Okay, we're starting to even creep me out. Moving along.
move on. I'll give you my four for a buck here. It's my four for a dollar. Going a little bit in the Strange era here as well. I'm going to go with Primortals from Techno Comics. Here's a book that I think a lot of people have missed and don't remember or remember fondly, but it actually is a pretty good read. It's a concept by Leonard Nimoy from Techno Comics, later Big Entertainment, and basically it's about Earth's a spaceship where they're transporting a prisoner, and it crashes into Earth, and or the prisoner escapes, crashes into Earth, so the people who are transporting him have to these aliens have to go find him, and it's less though about the superhero thing. It's more about Earth's first contact with these heroes or with these characters. And how Earth reacts to them while they're trying to find this individual. It doesn't sound like the most original concept, but it's in how sometimes it's not an original concept. It's how you take a concept that already has been out there and put a different spin on it. And this was a very realistic approach to how this would probably play out, and was I think a really interesting book and a book you can read now and still holds up really well. A good series, good nice art, Scott Eaton. Quite a veteran artist did the art on it. And it's a good concept. You can find it cheap, and I'd absolutely recommend it.
I don't remember much of the Techno Comics stuff. I remember that one that Neil Gaiman created.
Mr. Hero,
yeah. And it's funny when
Mickey
people
Spillane
still...
book as well. Danger.
Yeah. When people talk about steampunk, though, it's always that Neil Gaiman book that I think of. It's the image that's in my head when people talk about steampunk. Even though the title didn't last that long, I don't even think I collected one.
Well, I believe Techno Comics, really well, Big Entertainment, only lasted a couple of years. I mean, it did have some big creators and big names, but Gene Roddenberry's also had a book as well.
Lost Universe, was it?
I think it was Lost Universe. Yeah, so Gene Roddenberry's Lost Universe, which I think there was a TV series that came on shortly after, and the name is escaping me, but a lot of the concepts were transferred over from that series into this TV series that he did as well. So, it had some interesting stuff. And like I say, Leonard Nimoy, a story concept from him, it's space. So, if you're a Star Trek fan or there's an animated series I've been watching, something to check out. Let's move on.
Andromeda, Mo, would that be?
Andromeda. Yeah. Some of the concepts I understand were ported over from that, or similar concepts. So, let's move on to our reviews, guys. Brett, why don't you open up with what would we say we open up with here? Let's save the Fantastic Four for the end. So why don't we open up with one of the other two books?
I'm going to start out with the Ninjettes. Now, on the cover of this book, it says, from the pages of Jennifer Blood. This one's from Dynamite. I have no idea what Jennifer Blood is. I assume that maybe if I did know what Jennifer Blood was, then the comic might actually make some more sense to me.
I've read Jennifer Blood. It really wouldn't make much more.
Oh, good, good. Excellent. So, you know, it starts off with somebody getting sliced in half, the kid getting shot in the head, and it pretty much goes downhill from there into the land of boredom. And I really, the number one thing that I want to question about this book is, where does a statuesque woman who, what bar does the statuesque woman who wears a sword all the time go to where it's not looked upon as weird?
That's the bar I want to go to.
I want to know that. Yeah. No, I don't want to go there. She's crazy. Yeah, forget it. I would never read this book again.
Not a fan, huh?
I wish I hadn't even read it the first time.
Chris, your thoughts?
I thought it was Garth Ennis when we picked it. It's not.
Jennifer Blood is.
Just a guy named Ennis. Yes, but whoever's writing this is obviously just a relative. there are very few books that I actually like the pedophile character better than anyone else in this book. And he dies in the first page.
Wait a second. The key part of that is very few. So this isn't the only one. It's happened a couple other times.
Unfortunately, he does not spend most of his days trying to avoid getting raped. But
Yeah, no, he was the only one I sort of thought was funny. Yeah, the character is the young would-be assassin. I don't get why the older assassin would take her on. The bar scene fell flat. There's nothing to this. Although I've never read any Jennifer Blood, I would like to go back because I like Ennis so much, despite his, well, the Fury thing. I'm still willing to go back, but this book, this spinoff, even the title's hard to say. I don't like Ninjettes at all.
I'll just say I only read the first two issues of Jennifer Blood, but didn't find it as something worth continuing on. So, two non-fans. Keith, what do you think?
Well, it's funny. We've been doing all these small press books, and a couple of the things that I've brought up on the small press books are in Ninjettes, and it's not a small press book, smaller press, but we have bad perspective. We have characters that all look the same. We have people standing in space without any world kind of created around them. Brett mentioned the bar where you can walk around with a sword and no one says anything. Well, I don't know what that bar is like either, because all that I see in the four or five pages that take place in the bar are the seats they're sitting in and a flat color behind the foreground. There's not even a wall put behind them. They're just sitting in space. The perspective's terrible in this book. And like I said, I couldn't always follow the characters because they have one very statuesque brunette and a slightly less statuette brunette who's in the B story. So, and the relationship between them I wasn't completely clear on. It's got a big shock ending that I won't give away. Yeah, but like Chris, I enjoyed the first couple of pages, and then as soon as the pedophile was dead, and I'm not giving any spoilers, it's like the third page. I guess I've spoiled 1/7 of the book for you.
That was the first 25 seconds.
That's the last interesting thing that happens.
Okay, you guys actually have a very different take on this than me. The level of violence in this book is uncomfortable for me. That's my thing. I mean, it opens up and literally, like Brett says, somebody being cut in half, and then a child is shot, and that's too much. And I wonder at what point in time, just having mature readers on enough to let people – there's books that are mature readers' books that are nowhere near this level of violence. Is that enough to really get across to people how bloody gruesome this thing is. And that's kind of, I didn't feel it was enough. The level of violence, and I don't want to see a kid getting shot. It's one thing to do it off screen. That's horrifying enough, or off panel in this case. This is a book. I talked about how Alpha Girl seemed to revel in the sleaze. I didn't think that this reveled in the sleaze. I thought that this just so, and you know it's going to embrace the violence. You know from the title, which was Welcome to the Violence, I think, if I remember correctly. But the level of violence was uncomfortable for me. Other than that, I didn't have as much problems with the book, and that's almost where I feel badly. I thought the characters, I found them interesting. I didn't mind the art. I really liked the dialogue. For me, everything worked. So the problem is that I think this is a really good book. It's too bad the level of violence is more than I'm comfortable with, so I can't continue to read it. That's how I felt about it. I do think the more interesting storyline, there is no redeemable character in it. So I was hoping the more interesting storyline is the idea that the young girl who wishes to be the apprentice of this killer, if the storyline is that she discovers that she doesn't want to be this person, and this person is terrible and she needs to take her down, that's an interesting way to go. If she just becomes the apprentice of this horrible person, then that's boring as hell. But I won't be reading enough to find out where they go with it. I won't be reading anymore. All right, let's move on. Brett,
I'd like to respond to that a little bit. I'd just like to say I didn't find the violence over the top, but that was just because the shooting of the kid, I had to go back about 10 pages in to actually realize what had happened in that first.
Really?
Because, you only ever see the dead kid in one panel at the bottom.
Yeah, but it's a close-up of the kid's gaping forehead with a bullet through it.
Yeah, but she just cut a pedophile in half.
And she said, shut up, kid, or something like that before she killed her.
Yeah, I can't say I was too excited for this book from the start. I was still reeling from the fact that it wasn't Garth Ennis.
And I think it tries hard to be Garth Ennis. I mean, Garth Ennis writes that ultra-violence really well. You know, I'm a big fan of The Boys and, his old Vertigo stuff. But it's ultra-violence. There's no reality to it, so it becomes cartoony.
Which is why I had no trouble with the woman walking around with a sword in the bar. It's this ultra-violence. Mm-hmm. There's no reality to it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm desensitized to this because I do read The Boys. The Boys is one of my favorite comic books. And there's some sick shit in there.
There really is. I love it.
All right, Brett, move on to the next book. Why don't we talk about Thief of Thieves?
Okay, Thief of Thieves. This one, this one's by one of my favorites, Robert Kirkman, who's done a lot of great series about a thief who works with a younger thief that he took on in a group about to do a big score. You know, I read this book fairly quickly. I like Robert Kirkman. I wanted to like the book, but I have almost nothing to say about the book at the end of the book. And, you know, I'm just not really sure that I care enough to even really want to read the second issue. I mean, I can see how somebody would like it, but, you know, at the same time, I can see how somebody would just not care, and I'm kind of leaning towards the not caring part. You know, maybe I'd read the second just to see if it interested me, but you know, from the first issue, it really didn't do anything. The characters just don't connect with me.
Chris, your thoughts?
I really like the movie The Getaway, and this felt like a continuation of that, actually.
Not the '90s remake, right?
Oh, James Woods all the way, man. Alec Baldwin? No. We're talking the Peckinpah, man. I love the book. This is what I wanted out of The Scam from Red 10. The Scam, a book we reviewed, I think it was 2 weeks ago.
Comics Tribe.
Joel Mulder. Scam. Not the. Look it up. Everybody else like.
I understand what people say when it's slow moving, but I like a slow burn. I have to say every character that shows up in the book, I can't wait to see where their story arc is going. I have a relationship with the writer. I've read just about everything he's ever written. I love him. I trust him enough to build. The coloring is appropriate for the book. I can't wait to see what he steals. Love the book.
Keith.
I enjoy the book, but I won't say without reservations. I've been reading Walking Dead in trades, and I'm really enjoying it. However, as I read it, I do have these moments of, this is six issues worth that I'm reading right now. What would this? How much content would there actually be if I read it month to month? And I had a bit of that sense when I read Thief of Thieves. Is I think that as a trade, this is going to work much, much better than it does month to month. Serialized, I didn't really feel like there was enough to it. Like enough had happened in the storyline. They started a lot of threads that have no payoff immediately. So I think I will enjoy the book when I can read a bit of a chunk at one time. I don't think I'll continue reading it month to month, but when the first trade comes out, I'll pick it up.
Keith, because that's really interesting, because what I came across with this was that we did the first issue of Fatal from Image. We reviewed that. Everybody liked it. And that was written by Ed Brubaker. I went on and read the second issue, and I went, oh, God, this is going to work so much better when it's trade paperback. This is not working month to month, but this is going to be a good story here. This one, I read it and I put it down and went, I can't wait to come back every single month and read this. Because every single month I'm going to get a little bit of a storyline, episodic storyline, given to me that I can enjoy and pushes forward. I like the dialogue in this. I really love the scene where he explains to his girl that becomes his assistant/apprentice what she should look for when she's stealing a vehicle. I thought that was great characterization and dialogue. I think it has an interesting twist to it. This to me was just really terrific storytelling, character-driven storytelling. I'm gonna be on it every single month for sure. This gets my money. No responses, anybody? Obviously not.
I didn't care.
I just thought Keith would respond since I went the other way. But okay, no problems, Brett. Let's move on to the final one: Fantastic Four Season One.
Fantastic Four Season One. Wow. I looked at this book and I opened it up and I saw that it was by probably one of my least favorite writers ever, who did one of the worst book, probably the worst book that I've ever read in history of the Fantastic Four. And I looked at it and I said, I refuse to read this piece of crap because it's going to be a garbage 130-odd pages. I put it back down and I walked away. That's my review.
That's the best Wii view. If we talk comics, reviews, Wii view ever.
I have a question, actually. I didn't recognize the writer. Has he done much?
Oh, he worked on the Marvel Knights 4, and this is where the worst issue that I've ever read, the Marvel Knights 4 series that was in 2006. I think he also did the Spider-Man Marvel Knights run around that time, too. I hate him. He's a piece of garbage who should never have been allowed to write comic books, and I was hoping that he had stopped.
Apparently. He took a break to do script doctoring on the Spider-Man Broadway musical.
Well, good. I it's too bad that he didn't get like firebombed or something around that.
You know what I'd love to see is if we could get him and Liefeld together for Brett.
Yeah, maybe they could create their own company.
It could be a perfect storm though.
Brett, it
could create something.
Brett, that's interesting. That's an interesting take actually. Is your review is that you refuse to review it? Interesting. Let's move on to somebody who actually did read it. Chris,
I have trouble with this book. I can't recommend it. I really can't. But I'd say buy it for the backup feature. I love the reprinting of the first issue of the Jonathan Hickman's run.
Oh, the Hickman run is great,
I don't completely understand why we're doing these season ones. I personally believe you don't go back and rehash the origin unless you're going to do a Batman Year One type thing where you're actually going to add something new, have a new take. These are just to catch people up, but I don't think there are that many people out there who didn't quite understand the Fantastic Four to begin with. I don't get it. Although the last 22 pages, fantastic.
Because they weren't by the same damn writer, yeah.
That's no. They're by a good writer with a good artist.
Yes.
I will say about the first half of the book, I did kind of dig how the thing was drawn. You sort of had this hamburger thing going on. I kind of like that. Mayor McCheese. He sort of looked like Mayor McCheese.
Keith, can you explain to him why we're doing these season ones?
In what sense?
Chris said he doesn't understand why we're doing them. It's your idea to do them.
No.
No, he doesn't understand why Marvel is doing them.
Marvel is
okay, he doesn't understand why. Do you think that Marvel should be doing it? Because I'd like to get into this a little bit.
Well, and this is part of my review, is that the concept of the season one stories is Marvel's continuity is incredibly complicated. They don't want to keep telling you the origin story every month. It's been 50 years now since the Fantastic Four number one came out. They've never rebooted. So they're doing, this isn't a reboot. It is a retelling of the story, placing it only a couple of years ago, to just kind of talk up the continuity into the usual 5 to 7 years that Marvel has worked under for a long time. So none of it is going to be a total revamp, but at the same time, it's supposed to be an entry point where you can hand anyone one of these season one books and they will get all of Spider-Man's origin, they'll get all the Avengers origin, they'll get all the Fantastic Four origin, and then they can go right into the new books, which is why you get the issue of Jonathan Hickman, because he's the current writer. So you can also see what he's been at, what is happening now. My issue with it is, one, it's a $25 book. So if I go, hey, I've never bought a comic book, what's this Fantastic Four all about? Well, here, start with this $25 book. Isn't the way to go. Start with this $4 trade paperback. That would be a great option. But start with this $25 hardcover. No. The one thing that bugged me about the book is that I knew that they wanted to update it a bit. I knew they wanted to pull it up so that, you know, tuck in that 5 years or whatever. And in general, they actually did a pretty good job of not placing too much in time. There's no cell phones or not heavily used. I didn't notice one at all, though. They don't place cars. They don't place – there's very few references to specific that happened at a certain time moments, which I think was great. Until the moment where one of the characters says, just like in Mad Men, which places it specifically sometime in the last 4 years, which screws up the entire concept. Because this has to have taken place since the fall of 2007. And then I'm immediately trying to figure out how you fit 50 years of continuity into the last 4 years. So I think it fails on a couple of levels. I was okay with the story. I know the original story. I was a bit bugged by some of the things that they reworked for reasons I couldn't quite figure out why they were bothering to rework them that way.
Such as?
Dropping the way that their identities are public. I was fine with the way they did it. They cut out one whole storyline, basically, and I've forgotten the character's name. It was in Fantastic Four 2 or 3 when they go to see the psychic at the big, Carnegie Hall or whatever, and he tells the audience that they're the Fantastic Four. And it happens very early on. So pulling that out, but there's a few things. I was actually a bit disappointed that they lost the moment of Johnny Storm burning off Namor's beard, which to me is a really key moment early on in the Fantastic Four, and it's not in this book. They do it a different way. Still bringing in Namor, but they reworked it, and I didn't know why that moment was taken out when it was such a kind of key moment. But so there's a bit of retconning, even though it's not supposed to be what they're doing, because it's changing the way that Johnny's character behaves. So far, I don't feel that they're off to a great start. It kind of does all the things that they didn't want it to do and not enough of the things that they did.
I think it's a great idea to do these season ones because you do need to update these. I mean, you like it or not, if somebody who's 15 years old picks up one of those issues, the first five issues of Fantastic Four, they're probably not getting past the first couple pages. And that's why you need to do it. It does need to be done. As far as the Namor burning it off, see, I think that was lame. I always thought that was stupid, burning off the beard. Because, oh, yeah, in a city of 8 million people, all of a sudden he happens to run into this guy, and he recognizes him. Yeah, what a load of crap. This is much more realistic that he finds a way, Namor finds a way himself to regain his memories. So you gotten rid of something that's kind of stupid and unrealistic. I would agree. I think, and you saw this in basically every book nowadays, comic books, as a general rule, really need to, and Marvel's the worst for this, stop making pop culture references. You talked about the Mad Men. Thief of Thieves has a reference to YouTube. And like these pop culture references need to stop occurring in these books. It doesn't make it modern. What it does is it places it in a moment of time where it's one point in time it's gonna seem uncomfortable or not work, and just you're trying too hard. Now, as far as the book goes itself, I thought it wasn't working for the first little while, but I really loved it by the end. I thought it was terrific. I thought you did a great job giving me what the four characters are, and everybody got their moment. They talk at the end how it's the fours: the body, the mind, the soul, and the heart. Okay. So you got the body is the Torch, the mind is Mr. Fantastic, the thing is the soul, and the heart is Sue Storm. And they got this across to me by the end. The art is nice, modern, good take, very crisp and clean, good characterizations, very good pacing. It's a little bit too much at 100 or 110 pages or whatever, but really liked it. The backup story, the first thing of the Hickman, was a piece of crap. I cannot touch that. The artist draws Mr. Fantastic with more muscles than He-Man. It's stupid and ridiculous. I did not like it at all. But I enjoyed this book for the first part. Like I say, it took a while, but by the end, I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it's an excellent jumping on point for people who are unfamiliar with the Fantastic Four. Yeah, that's my take.
Are you aware we read left to right in this?
Pardon me?
Are you aware we read from left to right in comic books in North America?
No, Chris, I was not aware we did that.
I just thought maybe you'd started at the back and worked your way forward.
No, because the back was a piece of crap.
I know you love him, Chris, but I read 10 issues of Hickman that you loaned me. I just don't like it.
Sucks.
I've given it a try. I gave it a lot of issues, more than I thought I needed to, and I just don't dig it. It's
agree. Mr. Fantastic should not look like friggin' the Ultimate Warrior. Like, what the hell?
Well, in fairness, he can look like anything he wants, but because it's not like he can work out. I mean, he just looks the way he wants to look. So apparently he wants to look that way, but I don't know.
He wants to look like he's on steroids. Yeah, it's great.
I tried the Hickman stuff. It just didn't work for me. I've never been a gigantic Fantastic Four fan, with the exception of Byrne. So could be that, but it didn't wow me, and I'm glad it does you. I mean, I'm more of a DC guy than I am a Marvel guy.
All right, one thing I do want to do here, we're going to just drop in a little goodie for everybody, because they did here talk about how everybody got their characters' names, which was an interesting part of the book. We're just going to drop in Norm MacDonald's take on the Fantastic Four getting their names.
The origin of the Fantastic Four. Our heroes, flying in an experimental rocket ship, are assaulted by cosmic rays. Upon landing, they discover they have fantastic superpowers. Now, let's listen in and discover how Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, and Ben Grimm became the Fantastic Four.
Okay, I was up all last night, and I think I've come up with a great name for the group. Since we all have such fantastic powers, I think we should be called the Fantastic Four.
Ooh, fantastic.
All right.
That sounds good.
I like that.
Yeah, and I have come up with individual names as well, if I may. Ben Grimm, you are a rock-like thing of a man. You will be called The Thing.
Great.
Sue Storm, you're a woman who has the power to make herself invisible. The Invisible Woman is your name from now on.
Good.
Johnny Storm,
mm-hmm.
You are human, and yet you are a torch.
Yeah.
The Human Torch.
The Human Torch. Okay.
And I, Reed Richards, can stretch my body like a rubber band. I will be Mr. Fantastic. Okay, let's get on to business. First order of business for the Fantastic Four. Dr.
Reed?
Doom has the entire world's plutonium
Reed.
Supply.
Excuse me for a second.
Yes, Ben.
Never mind.
What is it, Ben?
It's nothing.
Ben, we have to speak openly here.
Well, it's just about the names.
Uh-huh. Do you like yours, The Thing?
No, I'm fine with that. It just seems a little... Well, I'm kind of a thing of a man. You're calling me The Thing.
Uh-huh.
Sue is a woman who can become invisible. She's the Invisible Woman.
Makes sense.
Johnny is human, yet a torch. So he's the Human Torch, right?
Sure.
And you can stretch your arms like a rubber band.
Uh-huh.
And you've named yourself Mr. Fantastic.
Yes, Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just seems a little odd, you know.
Yeah.
I don't understand the problem. I mean, we're all named after our powers.
Right. But your power is to stretch like a rubber band.
Right, that's why I come up with the idea, Mr. Fantastic. It's a fantastic ability I have.
Right, no one's saying it's not fantastic.
I mean, many people, when they see me stretch, they often use that word, fantastic.
I think what Ben's trying to say, Ben, right, is that we all have fantastic powers, but we're called what we do.
Right.
Yours is stretching.
Maybe Mr.
Stretch guy.
I was thinking stretch.
But that's my name.
Right, El Stretcho.
El Stretcho!
No, not El Stretcho. No, it's Mr. Fantastic is my name, okay? Now, if you guys have problems with your names, we can talk about it. My name is Mr. Fantastic. Let's talk about Dr. Doom.
It's just not fair.
It's not, what?
Okay. Ben, could you write?
Fantastic is an adjective that describes what I do.
Well, why aren't we adjectives?
You are. You're the Fantastic Four. You like that name, don't you?
But individually.
Do you like that name?
Yes.
Okay.
We like that.
So you like it when you're the Fantastic Four, but you don't like that I'm called Mr. Fantastic.
No. Now, Reed, just hear me out. We're the Fantastic Four.
Right.
You're Mr. Fantastic.
Right.
The Fantastic Four comprises... The Thing, the Invisible Girl, the Human Torch, and Mr. Fantastic.
Right.
Doesn't that seem a little odd to you?
What is odd about that? Just because my name's Mr. Fantastic and the group's called the Fantastic Four. That's your problem.
Because well, in a nutshell, yes.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's a coincidence.
A coincidence you created.
There's only so many names. Look. The group's been named, okay?
Why can't you be called like we are what you do? What your power is.
Okay, I think we're saying the same thing.
Okay, what are we saying?
We're saying that we're fine with being called Mr. Fantastic. I mean, in different words, right?
No. Reed, look. What we're saying is you should be called Mr. Stretchy Arm.
Listen, the group has been named, okay? And that's it. It's in it's in today's newspaper, as a matter of fact.
What do you mean it's in the newspaper?
Take a look.
The Fantastic Four, headed by Mr. Fantastic, will fight Dr. Doom today at 3.
There you go.
Byline by Reed Richards, a.k.a. Mr. Fantastic.
What?
Different guy. That's a different guy. I don't know who that is, and I don't know how the press get their sources. Whatever. Look, you don't want me to be called Mr. Fantastic? Okay, I won't be called Mr. Fantastic, okay? You can call me Mr. Assface.
Come on, don't.
No, I'm changing my name. I'll phone the editor of the, the Times tomorrow, and I'll say, hey, I'm changing it to Mr. Assface. Reprint all the newspapers, okay?
No, we don't want this.
No, come on, Reed.
It'll be Mr. Assface and the Fantastic Three.
If it's that important,
the press will have a field day with that.
Oh,
all right, if it's that important, you're Mr. Fantastic.
Just be him.
Okay. Yeah. But so I'm Mr. Fantastic.
Yes.
Yes, you're
all
Mr.
Right.
Fantastic.
I'm Mr. Fantastic. Good.
What should we do now, Mr. Fantastic?
You don't say it like that. You do not say it like that.
All right, Mr. Fantastic.
I see what you're doing. Okay.
All right, plugs time. Brett, go ahead.
All right, Brett, with two T's, _ WeTalk. on Twitter, and Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Oh, let's see now. Well, the Jenny Lane podcast is going strong, which is excellent, excellent stuff. And we're going to be interviewing Warbringer coming up. They're a thrash metal band in the vein of Exodus. And we have the King interview still to post when I get some time. Maybe I'll put them up together. So there's lots of music stuff on the horizon. Lots of different interviews coming up as well. So it's going to be a busy, busy time coming up. But I think it's going to be really exciting. Check out WeTalkPodcast.com because it's all going there.
The part of the podcast I'm most looking forward to now that he's also has himself a Twitter handle, Chris.
Well, I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, and as Mo alluded to, I'm now on the Twitter. So if you would like to hear about my insane ramblings on kung fu movies and just bizarre stuff, I'm Chris at Chris_WeTalk. That's it for me. I'm out.
Keith.
All right, I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. I just got retweeted by Jeff Lemire tonight. That was pretty nice. Who's also a fan of the Legion of Superheroes 5 years later storyline. And visit our website, WeTalkPodcast.com, where my $4 blog on the new universe has wrapped up, including the surprise inclusion of my little tiny touch of the new universe. And you can email me at Keith@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Awesome. Yeah, everybody, you really do want to check out Keith's blogs, the new universe and everything else he's done, because it's really, really good stuff. Keith is as much as I am loath to admit it, a very talented writer. So his blogs are available at WeTalkPodcast.com, and there's other good stuff on there. We Talk Wrestling has come back and become quickly the number one sports show, professional sports show, and top 10 on Podomatic. So we're really, really happy with that. So you can check that out on Podomatic. But also really what we want you to do, I mean, we do want everybody to subscribe to us on iTunes. We Talk Wrestling is on iTunes. You should subscribe. We Talk Comics is on iScrooms. If you haven't already subscribed, what the hell are you waiting for? But where everybody really wants to go is WeTalkPodcast.com. There you can get all our contact information, a little bit about us. You can get all our old shows from all the comic books, music, everything. Brett talked about the Janie Lane, former Warrant front man. I got an email from somebody who really appreciated the show. We called him the Paul McCartney of hard rock. I think that's a very nice compliment. I know Janie, a huge Beatles fan, would certainly have appreciated that. So thank you very much. If you haven't listened to that, we poured our hearts into it. Other than that, all I want to say is I need to get back to playing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, so we should get out of here. But first off, I had a friend who suffered an injury recently. It was quite horrific. He lost his left arm, the entire thing, and also his left leg. But don't worry, everybody, because he's all right now. O-U-T.